Good afternoon. Welcome to our last panel of our conference. I'm Matthew Spaulding with Hillsdale College in Washington, D.C., where I teach and spend the rest of my time preventing the federal government from giving us any money. The citizens of the United States of America have a right to applaud themselves for having given to mankind examples of an enlarged and liberal policy, a policy worthy of imitation. All possess alike liberty of conscience and immunities of citizenship. It is now no more that toleration is spoken of, as if it were the indulgence of one class of people that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it on all occasions their effectual support. This from George Washington's beautiful letter to the Hebrew congregation of Newport, Rhode Island, in which he explained to one of the most persecuted immigrant minority groups in world history the distinctive, perhaps exceptional, American understanding of the relationship between liberty and a new concept of citizenship. Prior to the American Revolution, the dominant view of allegiance stemmed from the system of feudalism that developed in medieval Europe, based on the idea of absolute fealty to the reigning sovereign. All inhabitants of the realm were automatically part of a perpetual relationship of allegiance between king and subject. Once a subject, always a subject. The American understanding of allegiance, however, is different. Rather than assuming the ground of civic obligation to be some ancient claim of divine right or absolute power, their argument begins with rights and consent, famously, but not exclusively, stated in the Declaration of Independence. All are equal in that each possess fundamental rights that exist under the laws of nature and nature's God. Legitimate governance to secure these rights, deriving its just powers from the consent of the governed. This new ground of civic obligation creates not sovereigns and subjects, but citizens who are ruled and rule in turn, as Aristotle might say. Ah, but here is the challenge. Recognizing rights means civil and religious liberty. Limiting government means more self-government. And that introduces another requirement for Republican rule, namely the formation of the civic and moral character of self-governing citizens. This meant more than a simple ritual assent to formal principle. It demanded the encouragement of common things, common language, common deliberation, virtues of self-reliance and work ethic, Republican habits, public spiritedness, sense of self-restraint. Hence the founders' emphasis on education and the character-forming institutions of civil society, especially the church and family. Moral education began with the first habits and manners there established. This formation started and was mostly defined at the early age by parents, who had the primary responsibility for upholding and upbringing their children. They followed Cicero's reference, the founders, by speaking of the seminary of the Republic. Primary education was to focus on the rudimentary elements of knowledge, teaching, reading, writing, arithmetic, geography, and especially history. As for the higher branches of education, that is, education taught at private and public colleges scattered around the country, its civic purposes were explained by Jefferson and Madison in the report to the commissioners at the University of Virginia. It is to develop the reasoning faculties of our youth, enlarge their minds, cultivate their morals, and instill into them the precepts of virtue and order, to form them to habits of reflection and correct action, rendering them examples of virtue to others and of happiness within themselves, and to form the statesmen, legislators, and judges on whom public prosperity and individual happiness are so much to depend. Sounds like the mission statement of Hillsdale College. Mm-hmm. Living up to the promise of American citizenship, of course, has not always been as easy and without struggle. One need only consider the existence of slavery as a prominent example of that point. But more often nowadays, the gap between America's principles and its practices is seen more as hypocrisy than aspiration, and we ignore what was, is, and can be accomplished in this country. salient question, seems to me, is not so much whether and where we have fallen short. The question is, what are those principles and whether they are worthy of allegiance then and today? Contemporary controversy over the meaning of American citizenship, from immigration policy to debates about Common Core, AP history, turn largely on the meaning of those first principles. That is to say, there's not as much objection about educating for citizenship. The controversy is whether the old principles are so disfigured to be obsolete as a guide and unworthy to be taught to our children, our students, and our fellow citizens. For if those old principles are flawed, then we need new ones as a central principle for forming and educating our citizens. That seems to be the dominant view today. America is exceptional in its founding because it is guided and grounded on truths understood to be applicable to all men in all times. It is nevertheless, to use the particular phrase used by the founders on this particular point, an experiment. Never final or definitive, for this people to determine if men are capable of governing themselves. So, in the midst of not only widespread popular confusion about the meaning of American citizenship, but also intense intellectual criticism and scorn of its underlying principles, not to mention the mediocrity of American education, is it possible to educate for citizenship? Can responsibility and civic awareness, which I take to mean the moral habits of citizenship, be regained? And to discuss this, we have, shall I say, an exceptional panel. We will go in the order in your program. First is Dr. Colleen Sheehan, a professor of politics and the director of the Ryan Center for the Study of Free Institutions and Public Good at Villanova University, followed by Jay Hine, who's the president of the Sagamore Institute, Indianapolis-based think tank that he co-founded with Senator Dan Coats in 2004, and lastly, Bill McClay, who is the G.T. and Libby Blankenship Chair in History of Liberty at the University of Oklahoma. Colleen.